Blog Talk Radio.
WIJSF.com. Women in Jazz South Florida, Inc. is a nonprofit educational organization that promotes women musicians globally through events, concerts, performances, clinics, lectures, workshops, articles, interviews, newsletters, courses, contacts, research, history, archives, websites, film, audio and video recordings, and recognition. Visit us at WIJSF.com. You're listening to blogtalkradio.com/musicwoman with your host, Diva JC.
Well, good afternoon. This is Dr. Diva J.C. here with Music Woman Radio in gloomy Atlanta. We say the weather here is bipolar. Doesn't know what it wants to do from day to day. And so it's overcast, but it's not too cold. It's 66 degrees, so we can live with that. Well, you just listened to You Are from my guest, Allison Crockett. So let's bring her in.
Hey there.
Hi. Hi. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
And where are you calling in from?
Oh, I am right outside of Washington, D.C.
Okay, great. Well, let's dive right into it. So, Allison, how old were you when you first came to music?
Oh, in utero. My father was a pianist and a saxophonist who turned into a doctor, and he would play music single night. So I heard music from the time I was born, really loud for a long time, and I started wanting to play the piano when I was 2 or 3 years old, but I didn't start actually till I was about 6. So I wanted to, whenever back in the days when they had piano stores in the mall, that's a while ago, but they had piano stores in the mall, and we would go, and I would see a piano, and I would want to go in, and I would stroke the piano, and I would touch it and play it, and I was like, this is it right here. This is it.
Are you originally from D.C.?
I am. I've lived in quite a few different places. I lived in Philadelphia. I went to college in Philadelphia and lived there for many years. And I lived in New York, Brooklyn, New York, for about 10 years over there. And I've been back in the D.C. area for about 15 years now.
And which college did you go to in Philly?
I went to Temple University.
Oh, okay. I went to LaSalle.
Oh, okay. So we fellow Philly people.
Yes, that's where I cut my teeth musically, too.
Yeah, well, I don't really consider myself a D.C. musician as in terms of where it is that where I come out of. I really think of myself as a Philadelphia musician because that's who I was around the most. That's where I really learned the craft of being a musician. And, you know, that's kind of my musical home.
Me too. Me too. Mm. Well, we'll talk about that a little later. Now, at Temple, did you get a degree in music theory?
I did. I didn't get a degree in music theory, but I got a degree in just straight-up performance. I was very blessed that back in that time, my mom was okay with me getting a degree in music. And so I went ahead and I chose university. Because the only way to get a music degree back then was, for many places, was a classical music degree. So I studied classical voice, and I didn't want to do it anymore, and so I transferred to Temple University. It was one of the few places in the United States that had a jazz program back then and was close enough to my mom. I wanted to be a little closer to home, and Syracuse, New York was a little too far. So Philly was just the right amount, and it was a city, and it's a wonderful city, and so I got my whole degree over at Temple University, the music department, Esther Boyer College of Music.
Okay, and so you write your own music, you write original music.
I do. I've been a songwriter since I was 14 years old. And I still have a copy of the first song that I ever wrote. It's around here someplace. And I look at it occasionally.
Okay.
I've been writing for a long time.
So how many songs would you say that you've written?
100. But that doesn't mean just because I've written hundreds of them doesn't mean that I've recorded all of them.
Right.
But I've written a lot of songs, and a lot of times, or I've written a lot of portions of songs. But you know, it I had to learn how to write in different styles. I had to learn how to chord in different styles and figure out what forms worked for what. I had to change the way that I wrote songs. I've written just only lyrics for songs. I've written all the parts for a song. I've done, you know, I'm the whole musician. I'm not as good of a producer as I would like to be sometimes, but you know, but I have, but I've been a writer since, you know, since I could figure out how to do it.
And so, do you have a publishing company?
I do.
And what's the name of it?
It is Little Girl Big Voice.
Okay. And are you with ASCAP, BMI, SASM?
I'm with BMI.
BMI. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have you ever considered putting your songs in a song book?
Huh. I've not considered that. I've never been asked. I've never thought about it. Well, one, you know, nowadays people don't read sheet music as much. And you know, I've never thought about that. Maybe I'll do that.
Well, the reason why I asked is because I claim to be the only woman in the world with a jazz and blues song book. Now, I know Roberta Flack was working on hers, and
mm-hmm.
Carmen Lundy was working on a song book, but I haven't seen those books. So I
mm-hmm.
always encourage our members in particular to put their songs in a song book, even if it's only 5 or 10 songs.
Mm-hmm.
That is
mm-hmm.
how I copy wrote 40 songs at one time.
Wow. Mm.
Yeah. So then if you pull them out, somebody else wants to do it, you might have to copyright them again, but they're already protected in that
mm-hmm.
one book, you see. And you got to protect your music, you know. And you need to document it, and you need to make it shareable, because there are millions of musicians that read music. And
yeah.
just watched a video of the Polar Awards that honored Sting and I can't think of the brother's name right now from Weather Report, the saxophone player. What is his name? He's on the cover. Weather Report.
Oh, Wayne Shorter.
Wayne Shorter, yeah. He's on the cover of Our Music Man magazine, but I get blanks every time, you know, often. So, anyway, you have a few CDs. What are the titles of your CDs?
Sure. I have quite a few. So, I have On Becoming a Woman, which I'm getting ready to re-release in a bit. I'm getting ready to re-release that with a few other songs that are associated with it. It's going to be called The Woman I Became, because the first one is, you know, On Becoming a Woman. Then I did a remix record, because I did a lot of music in dance and house music and drum and bass and breakbeats and things like that when I was over in Europe and in Japan. Then I did a record of me playing and singing called Bear. And then I took a little bit of a break, and then I released a political record called Mommy What's a Depression. And then I took another little break, because I had children, and I still do, but then I released in around 2017-18, I released an EP called Obrigada that was recorded in Brazil, and I did several videos with that. And I just recently released my Echoes of an Era Redux record, part of my father's record collection, Volume 1. So I've done quite a bit.
Okay. Was your mother musically inclined to?
My mother really loved music, but she didn't really, have an aptitude for it. She loved to sing and she loved to dance and she loved piano, but she didn't really, she really felt like she didn't really have a big aptitude for it, even though she did it growing up. You know, sometimes when people tell you that you're not that good, it sticks with you. So I would hear her sing in church and I'm like, I think you sound fine, you know?
Yeah.
But she enjoyed listening to music. She enjoyed being around it.
Well, I claim that women are the first musical instrument that every person that's born experiences, because the blood rushing through the veins is the strings. The heart is the drum. And she's probably humming or singing. So your mother is the first musical instrument that you encounter. But that leads to the question, why do men dominate the $41 billion music industry?
Well, that's a large question. and that's a big, large question. And men have been in control of a lot of this stuff for a very long time. And it's only recently, as you well know, that women were even able to participate and be lauded more than maybe a few here and there.
Absolutely.
So it is a bit different now.
Do you work with any women musicians?
I do, and I have. Actually, a gig that I'm getting ready to do here in D.C., place called Mr. Henry's on April 5th. I'm going to be playing with the Washington Women in Jazz creator, the festival creator, Amy Borman. And,
Amy is a member of Women in Jazz South Florida. She's been featured in our publication, too.
So she's a wonderful, wonderful pianist. I've worked with her. I used to work with Miriam Sullivan, the bass player, quite a bit. Amy Shook, just recently, who's a bass player, just did a gig with me. I perform with women in this area, not all the time, but I do perform with women musicians as well.
Good, good. That's good to hear. Okay, so we're going to listen to I Am a Million. You want to set that up for us?
Cool. Well, I'm a Million. Yes. Do you want me to tell you about it?
Yes.
Okay. So I Am a Million is based off, is a song that I wrote that was based off of me driving down Broad Street in Philadelphia near Allegheny Avenue. And there was a big billboard that was there on Broad Street on the left-hand side, and it had a little black boy on it putting his hand up with his fist up, and it said, I am a million. And I saw that every single day that I went down to downtown Philly when 'cause I lived in Germantown, and I had to go down to Temple University. I saw it, and it just really, really touched me, and I remembered it years later, and I just saw that, and I wrote the song based off of that, because, you know, we are multitudes, and I think about Black Panthers and Huey Newton, and, you know, I am Huey Newton, and, you know, and Malcolm X, and I am Malcolm X, and, you know, knowing who we are and what it is that we can do. And so it we don't have to sit in a spirit of can't do anything, because we can, because we are multitudes, we are a million. And that's why I wrote the song.
Okay, so let's listen. And are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, I just slipped out of the studio.
No, no problem.
Give me a second. I'm sorry. This okay, here we are. Here we go. I Am a Million by Alison Krauchin.
My sisters, the sins of my cousins who turned away dozens, who reached out and welcomed my black ass to the world, who nurtured me and told me I was free as freedoms were stripped from me. I pledge allegiance to this country.
Me and you, we gotta stand
sounded like a major production. How many musicians were involved in that?
Yeah. Well, believe it or not, it wasn't a huge amount of musicians. What my brother did is he was my producer, and his name is Teddy Crockett. We found a string arranger who basically overdubbed all the strings many, many, many times. So it sounds like orchestra. And so that it allowed, you know, at that time it allowed people to afford having an orchestra. And, you know, with the technology now, a lot of the things that we were doing in the early 2010s, they're able to do now with a touch of a button. But back then you had to spend a lot of to figure all this stuff out. So that's actually one of my favorite songs off of that record.
Okay, and what years were you in Philly, from when to when?
Oh, when was I in Philly? I was in Philly from around, 91 to probably about 96, 97, 98. Yeah, something like that.
Okay. Because I was there from 76 to 81. So that was quite a time, 10 years before you.
I was a little kid.
Yeah. Well, I had the fortune to be with Philly Joe Jones, Shirley Scott, Benny Nelson, Bobby Durham. You know, these were the people, Pieces of a Dream. Tony Williams. You know, they were just a...
I know all them.
Yeah, and I first saw Rochelle Farrell at a little club in South Philly. Mm-hmm. She was 18 at the time, and I said, she's going.
Oh, wow.
And then mm-hmm. I was in Montreux, Switzerland, mm-hmm. and she just tore it apart, you know. But let me ask you this. So what musicians did you work with in Philly?
Oh, God, goodness. I didn't work with Trudy Pitt, Mr. C, but I saw them frequently, and I've done work with Shirley Scott. I got married when I was in Philadelphia, so I was originally married to Robert Landham, and so, of course, I played with the Landham brothers a lot. I played with Orrin Evans, Mike Boone, John Swanna, Bootsy Barnes, Eddie Green. Oh, goodness. The names
Bootsy
that I've... yeah.
What about Odine Pope? Did you ever meet
him? I did not. My ex-husband played with Odine Pope. I never played with Odine Pope, but I saw him. I knew him pretty well.
Okay. So we have a common musical path there.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the reason why I invited you to come on this show was a statement that you made about country music on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You want to elaborate on that a little bit?
I have to remember what exactly I said.
You were talking about the origins of country music.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
I think it was about Beyonce's new song, New Country.
Yeah. So that is really blown up. Everybody, you know, everybody was I don't want to say mad, but up in arms about Beyonce having a country song, even though this is not her first country song. And one of the things that I actually have to say about that song, about the record that she made, is that she uplifted a lot of people who have been black in country for a long time, like Rhiannon Giddens, who I'm a big fan of. But country music, what I was trying to kind of point out is that country music is heavily, heavily influenced. It is by the blues and by Black American music in general. The picking styles of the guitar have been influenced by black musicians. Instruments that are used are a mixture of Scots, Irish, and African instruments, like the banjo, the washboard, the jugs, the washboard and the banjo and the jug band of that era. You know, that was what a lot of black people were doing in music. And so, you know, country music is one of those, outside of jazz, it's one of the most American styles of music that was heavily, heavily, heavily influenced by Black American music sources and musicians that were playing in Black styles, mixed again with that Scots, Irish, and Eastern European and Mexican music. And so the way, when you think about country, the first kind of like modern country that kind of came out with hillbilly music, they started calling it country swing. Country swing, I believe, was out of Texas. And you know, if swing is in the name, you know that it probably has something to do with jazz and Black American music style. And so I like to use the moniker of Black American music, not because it's only about being Black and only Black people invented it, or only Black people or only Black people participated in it. Black American music is kind of an umbrella term used in the same way as you would use European classical music or Indian music or anything like that. Because Black people in the Americas, period, come from these western shores of Africa. And we had many, many different, as you know, many, many different ethnic groups merged and went from and were all over the Americas. And Black American music is the music that these Africans created when they came into contact with Europeans and indigenous Americans. So you see the same types of things over and over and over again in these styles. And so when you go to Brazil and you listen to samba, it has the same types of feelings, the same kind of rhythmic pockets and usage of harmony and call and response and ostinato and all of these things that you see in jazz or funk. And it all works pretty much the same. And so country music is somewhat under the umbrella, or I say it's at the very least highly, highly influenced by Black American music styles like and jazz. And we have to remember that country music came up at the same time. It was coming up at the same time as jazz and blues. And blues was the first popular music of the 20th century. So since blues was the first popular music, and you had Tin Pan Alley, all those Tin Pan Alley composers were composing blues based off of the blues music that W.C. Handy started making popular in sheet music, and so it had several different kinds of blues, and the country blues probably is the blues that really influenced. The country music, the country part, which is the Southern and Appalachian music of those people, like with the Melungeons that were a mix of African slaves and freedmen, the Scots-Irish that moved into those mountains, and the Native Americans that were there. So, you know, President Lincoln was a Melungeon. And so you'll see darker Melungeons and lighter Melungeons. And they have kind of kinky straight hair that's dark, and they have features that seem to, oh, I can't really place it because it's a mixture of all of those different types together and live together. And some of that music, that some of the same types of things that happened in the Scots-Irish and the way that they did things with the melismatic storytelling aspects, some of the songs that they used. And African-Americans, one of the tenets of Black American music is that we tend to take melodies that are already in existence, or we take different sermons or songs or things, snippets of things, and we refashion it in the image that we would like to hear it in. And so I can imagine that as Black people heard some of these hymns and things, they fashioned those things into spirituals, and refashioned different ways of utilizing common household things like a washboard or a jug, and taking the European instruments that they were given and created, and also they had the banjo, because that was something that was commonly used, which was a gourd, and so it's an instrument that has been used in Africa for centuries. And they took all these instruments, and the white people of the area were like, oh, we like that music, because even though there was an apartheid system, people's culture still goes back and forward, and so people like that music. And they white people were like, well, we can take some of that music and we can add it to ours as normal culture happens, and we'll do stuff with it the way we want to do it. And so you had this merging of sounds. And so we also know that Ray Charles had a country album. There was Charlie Pride, who was a country artist. The Pointer Sisters had a country album. Black people in country have been in country since there was country. So like the whole hullabaloo about Beyonce, who's from Houston of all places, saying that, you know, have people having a problem with her coming into country is weird. It's strange. But country musicians, they tend to be very conservative a lot of times, not just conservative in terms of political ways of being, but they tend to be conservative in terms of how they want their music to be portrayed. And so they like traditional types of things, but when Shania Twain and Garth Brooks and the Dixie Chicks started adding in rock elements and showing belly buttons like Shania Twain did, and adding all these different things, they lost their minds in the 90s. They lost their minds. And then when Nelly did a rap song, I can't remember with the artist that he did it with, but they lost their minds then too. Then Lil Nas X started coming and they were like, no ma'am, no sir, and they lost their minds then too. So this is nothing new for country people who love country to be mad at Black people being a part of the music that they've been a part of since the beginning.
I'm kind of concerned, because there would be no culture in this country if it were not for Africans. It would have been cultureless society. Cultureless.
Well, I would not go that far. But I would say it would certainly be a very, very different culture than it is, and that a culture of African Americans or Black Americans literally has taken over the planet, and everybody wants to be like us in some way. They either want to do our art, they want to do our music, they want to do our dance, they want to do our fashion, they want to speak our languages, our words, and utilize them. They want to have our sense of cool. Our culture is very, very important to Americans being thought of as America. And I would say that, as you know, also from the African diaspora, because the Caribbean, that is, those are Black Americans or African Americans as well. They're just in the Caribbean. And because America is three separate continents and a set of islands in the Caribbean Ocean. And this is the Americas. And wherever we were, we did similar things, cultures that have electrified American culture quite a bit. So we are really, really, really important to what is American culture. That's what I
would say. Do you know that besides armaments, Black music is the next largest export of the United States? You know, and we keep we keep trying to be nice about this, but they're not nice about it. They're not nice about taking our music, packaging it, commercializing it, marketing it, and then saying that it's their music. It isn't their music. Their music came out of Europe only because Europeans need to document everything. But just because I document the life of Alison Krauckett does not mean that I am Alison Krauckett.
I completely understand that perspective, and I get it. And I think that you are very right in many respects. I have evolved on the calling certain things theft, more so because I'm doing more study, I'm understanding the different aesthetics. And one of those aesthetics of European culture is capitalism. Though America didn't create capitalism, and I am not against capitalism, but it's a very different philosophy and way of being and structuring the society than most other indigenous peoples. And so African Americans and Africans, we tended to not think of music and dance as an individual thing. We did music together. We did it in church. We danced in clubs and bars and in homes, and we made music together. And our music required us to all be together. And in most cultures and societies, music is a communal situation. There is not a sense of ownership. You don't hear about spirituals being owned. Like, you don't hear about a person who wrote a spiritual. And it is something that the community birthed and that the community created. And so you don't hear about certain dances. You don't hear about a person who created the cakewalk or the Charleston or any of these. You hear about people who might have been really good at it, but you don't hear about that creation of it because it is a communal, we have a communal art form. And,
right.
And so it's a very different way of thinking about things. And we don't create, we create experientially. So one of the things that I teach right now is in terms of understanding the differences. Neither one is better or worse, but America made the decision, or white America made the decision, that what was European was human, and what was everybody else was not. And Black people were not human. And everybody else who had lighter skin, as they progressively got lighter, was closer to human, and they were the most human. And when you start liking a music or a culture or a cultural product that you from people that you deem not human, well, you can't have that. You can't claim that. It's cognitive dissonance to say, oh, I'm gonna use this music and it's really a great music, and say that these people created it. So they had to find a way. Well, we can take this and we can make money off of it, because that's what capitalism does. It's a mercantile economy and a mercantile society. And mercantile societies are everywhere.
That's exactly what happened with the blues, with Mamie Smith. But listen, mm-hmm. we're coming to the end of you, and I could probably talk for another hour, okay? But what, and you teach, what advice would you give a young woman coming into the music industry?
I would give the advice of it's a tough one, because the music industry is a very difficult industry to make a living at. But I would say, study, if you are a singer, study or an instrument, study your instrument, study and really know how it works. But more importantly, get out and make it, make that music, put that music out, figure out how to be on social media and be on it, and utilize it to the best of your ability. Know your community. Feel comfortable with the musicians and the people who are making music in your community. You cannot do this alone. Create a team of people who are your friends or the people that you work around, so that you can have people who do different things. Because we are not only being a musician, we are business managers, we are graphic artists, we are web designers, we are social media experts, we are promotion experts, tour manager, and how to be a booking agent. We have to understand licensing, and we have to understand how to interact with people. We need to be travel agents, and we have to be so many different things. And when you're beginning, the first thing you just need to know is how to get a gig. Like, just know how to get a gig, or know how to make music on your computer and work with other people and be able to get your music out and about and be able to collaborate with as many different people as you can in the beginning. And just start by, you know, writing your music or singing the music of others or playing the music of others with other people. Find as many opportunities as you can, as early as you can, because depending on what part of the music that you're in, your best earning years are between 17 and 25. Those are the times where you can make the most, even the poorest also, but you have the most opportunity. And so take advantage of being young when you're young. And then keep on, and then be perseverant. You know, just persevere. Because even though it might not look like you're doing well in the beginning, you're probably doing a whole lot better than you think.
That's great. Now, I would have to differ with you on that, because I worked a lot in Philly and New York where I didn't make any money. But and that was in my 20s. But by 40, I was traveling to Europe where I really, really earned some money. Listen, I have so enjoyed talking to you. And I'm going to use some of what you say. I'm compiling a short video of this question from some of my guests. So I hope mm-hmm. I have your permission to use that.
Sure.
But we're going to go out on every song. So tell us about every song.
Oh, every song is from my record, Obrigada, which is the only Brazilian Portuguese word that I really know, which means thank
obrigado.
You.
Obrigado.
Sim. Yeah, obrigada. And if you're a man, you would say obrigado. And I went to Brazil after I got divorced, and I just fell in love with Sao Paulo and the musicians that were there. And I fell in love, and I really learned how the music went. And so I wrote this song for that particular recording session that I did and with musicians. And I you know, I just thought about every song. You know, this is how I write. It tells about who it is that I am. It's my story as a songwriter. It tells every song I sing, every note I play, every word I write. You know, it's about how I bring my own emotions and my own story, my own journey of life into music. That's what the song's about.
So how many children do you have?
Oh, I have two children.
Are they musically inclined?
They are, but they don't want to do it. I would love for them. My youngest daughter was a great trombonist for a minute. She's like, oh, I'm done. But she makes she's into film and advertising right now, and she wants to, but she's been making music just in her spare time. And my youngest daughter was, she was in a musical last year, and she played Scarecrow in The Wizard of Oz. And
okay.
That was the first time that I heard her sing, and she was really good. I'm like, why are you not participating? Because she just doesn't want to.
Well, but later on she may. Later on.
Who knows?
Listen, give everybody your website.
CROCKETT.com. And you
okay.
can come to my social media or any of those things. I'm easy to find.
Do you have any gigs coming up?
I sure do. I'll be at Mr. Henry's doing my Nat King Cole show on April 5th. I'll be going in about a week down to North Carolina to Western Carolina University in order to present some master classes and do a performance over there. And then I'll be at Blues Alley on May the 9th, and that will be premiering the Woman I Became, which is the reissue of On Becoming a Woman.
Beautiful. Okay, here we go. And I'll talk to you soon. I just sent you an email. Okay?
Great. Thank
All
you
right.
so much.
Thank you. Here's Allison
right.
Crockett, Every Song.
WIJSF.com. Women in Jazz South Florida, Inc. is a nonprofit educational organization that promotes women musicians globally.